Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Señoras y señoritas, aquí está el DJ Héctor Bonifacio Echeverría Cervantes de la Cruz Arroyo Rojas. Esta es la radio que sacó a toda la estación donde el rock vive y no muere. Vamos a escuchar un par de temas de Queens of the Stone Age. Primero vamos a escuchar First It Giveth. Qué música impresionante, temible y verdaderamente ahora. Van a ver, aquí va.
Queens of the Stone Age, No One Knows.
Do you know what? 3 years in Spain, and I heard the word first at the end of that. That's absolutely bonkers off its trolley at the
Buenas
end.
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes is good evening.
Indeed.
And then it was primero. And then there was something.
Escuche.
Escuche. Escuchar, which is to listen.
To listen, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. See, we're so fluent. We're just natural linguists, aren't we, on the Supertone show.
We certainly are. But Queen of the Stone Age, what an opener.
It's mad, you know, because I don't really know the band, but I love that song. I love that song.
Well, I think, you know, in terms of modern heavy music, they are probably the, you know, the king. Certainly this record, when it came out, it just blew me away. I mean, the opening track is just totally mental. What I love about it, Josh Homme's guitar sound is so unusual. For a you know, a rock and roller, for a, you know, for that sort of style, that heavy thing, it's like middly and gritty, and it's not, doesn't sound heavy, but it certainly does. And, you know, Nick Oliveri, apparently they fell out quite heavily, you know, Nick Oliveri and Josh Homme. Okay. Nearly killing themselves on quite a few occasions, fighting and stuff. But the bass in that, it goes, it's like some sort of grunting sort of baboon or something. It's fantastic.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because Q Magazine possibly the only full-on legs akimbo guitar great to be based around a rhythm that goes oompa, oompa, oompa.
It is, though. And, of course, Dave Grohl played drums on that album.
Yeah. I only just found that out.
Yeah. And the previous show, of course, he'd played on Tenacious D.
Indeed. He's very friendly, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, yeah. And he's such a great drummer because it has a tremendous energy, that record. Mm. And the whole record does, you know.
Do you know what's really interesting as we learn about, because I'll hold my hands up, there are some bands that, you know, just aren't accessible to me. Sometimes because even though I play bass and I love to rock out, sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming if I'm on the receiving end of kind of a lads type band. And just looking into, but this band, just playing this on the show has really opened up a door for me, you know, in terms of I feel like, oh, I want to go in and find out more about who they are and listen to more of their music. It's really odd.
Well, Josh Homme, I mean, he's a very talented producer as well, you know, working with the Arctic Monkeys, because I think he saved the Arctic Monkeys. When you listen to, I can't remember which album it was, but he produced it, and you could hear that Queen's sort of Stone Age influence. And there's a lot of atonal stuff going in there, stuff that just doesn't sound quite right, but sounds so right, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it feels fresh.
Marvellous, absolutely marvellous. And of course, Josh Homme produced that as well. Oh, what other producers?
Well, get in there.
Get in there.
Shake your money maker,
Shake Your Moneymaker, Fleetwood Mac.
Featuring Jeremy Spencer on slide guitar.
Slide.
Yeah. Great player. Everybody thinks, you know, everybody forgets, I should say, that Jeremy Spencer was actually a major guitar player in Fleetwood Mac. But of course he was. And that was the first album, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Produced by the lovely Mike Vernon again.
Indeed.
Yeah.
He's everywhere around that era, isn't he, Mike?
Of course he is, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
He was central to that blues, British blues scene, you know. Incredible.
So that was released on the 24th of February, 1968.
About the same time Led Zeppelin 1 was released.
Here
That's
we
funny.
Go.
Yeah, there we are. Anyway, let's move on. And I suspect also recorded at Olympic Studios, like Led Zeppelin 1.
Oh, I need to check that out, actually. I do know, though, that it was an overnight success, that. And went to number 4 and stayed in the album charts, wait for it, for 37 weeks.
No.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Dark Side of the Chicken, isn't it?
It's amazing the way some of these songs just connect and they're just there. I remember, you know, when I was a teenager, it doesn't happen the same these days, does it really? But it's just like, it connects so vibrantly. It's just there.
And that's an Elmore James cover, of course.
Yeah. You can feel the history in that song, can't you?
Now, Shake Your Moneymaker. What is the moneymaker?
Well, I was going to ask that, but I'm probably going to blush.
Of course you are. It's the ass.
It's shake your ass.
That's right, shake your moneymaker, that's what they say. And there you go then. You can tell the energy of the British blues explosion.
It is an explosion, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about what was going on at that time, you know, there was nothing like that. And there is an excitement there. And if you've never heard blues played like that before, it was just amazing, you know?
I can imagine that, actually, because when I hear somebody play with such energy, it could be the same song, but it's the way they played it, isn't it? That
totally,
really
yeah.
gives it that oomph.
And prior to this, of course, Peter Green was in John Mayall's Bluesbreakers, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And I think, did John Mayall buy him some studio time at Decca?
As a birthday present, he gave him some free time at Decca to go and record.
Yeah.
And that's how it all started.
That's how it all started.
But I want to know, apparently, Mick Fleetwood was sacked from the Bluesbreakers, and I wonder why.
Yeah, he was too tall. He's a very tall man.
Okay. That's it.
Lay down and
like I always do. The bosom of the freedom I very rarely choose. I hear the fire still burning, so long into my night. Still captive and still yearning, surrender to your light.
Plant still rocking out there with the Shapeshifters. Oh, is it the Sensational Shapeshifters?
It's Sensational, darling.
Yeah, the darling. that was the May Queen.
Indeed.
Yeah.
From Carry Fire, which is Robert's 11th solo album, released October 2017.
And it's the second one he did with the Sensational Shapeshifters.
now you start on the S's and I'm on the R's.
Yeah.
We're a great couple, aren't we? The speech impediments. Free Woodwick.
Well, the last show, it sounded like I had my mouth. I had little marbles in my mouth and I've got a bit of a cold today. I can hear it in my voice.
Yeah, we're not well, but it doesn't matter. Carry on. The music is cheering us up and it healing, is indeed, very yeah. healing. Now, in the Sensational Shapeshifters. Okay,
you.
Right. In the band. You've got cast guitarist Liam Skin Tyson. Now, how did Skin get to play with Robert? That's one thing.
Well, I don't know. But what I do know is that he works very closely with Dan Whitelock Jones, who is designed and manufactured the Supertone Liverpool amp.
That's our amplifier.
That's our amp.
From our own company.
Our guitar amp.
A collaboration.
And also, he makes great effects pedals, which we are going to be have a lot of input into them, and we're going to be releasing them soon. But I know that Skin actually uses some of his boosters and all that sort of stuff. This is Dan's boosters.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really odd, you know, when we're there at Dan's house and he's hanging out with Skin and sorting stuff out, and then you've got with the band you've got Justin Adams on guitar, and then you've got Dave Smith on drums, Billy Fuller on bass, and then there's a guy called Yilda Kamara on West African instrumentation. And he first played with Robert Plant in 2014 in the Glastonbury. But what's quite interesting is that he's also a griot.
Ah.
And I didn't know what that was, so I looked it up, and apparently it's a West African historian, storyteller, like a bard, a repository of oral traditions, so it's often seen as a social leader. What a lovely name, like a bard, but a griot.
A griot?
Yeah. So Yilda's been... His father was blind, apparently, when he was growing up in Gambia, and he just couldn't get to keep his hands off the instruments. He was just totally fascinating with the music. And his father was travelling around with... and playing, and he sort of learned his trade just in that, very privileged, I'd imagine. So it's quite beautiful to think that you've got kind of an esteemed authenticity as well.
Well, I've got a lot of time for Robert Plant. He went over to Marrakesh in Morocco early on.
Yeah.
And he's worked a lot over there. And his all his music now has got that beautiful fusion of... African rhythm. I mean, on there it sounds like a borum. I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's one of these West African drums, you know, an amazing sounding thing. Mm. But the great thing about Robert Plant, about, you know, everything is constantly moving. He's always moving on musically. And, you know, Jimmy Page, God bless him, you know, he has been... pickled in aspic, in a way. He's like, he's always back in Led Zeppelin. He always talks about Led Zeppelin. You know, everything's to do with Led Zeppelin, which, of course, being the biggest band in the world and him writing and producing most of the machine, you can understand.
Yeah.
But Robert has moved on. And that is a beautiful thing. And his music has quality. And it's very rare that you get that sort of continuity and progress of a musician, especially as they get older, because they tend to want to go back. But he doesn't, you know. He's the one that resists the Led Zepp forming again. And, you know, he wants to push forward rather than look back, which is a beautiful thing.
It's quite interesting, actually, because I think, in a way, it's quite a privileged position. I was watching an interview today with Noel Gallagher and the guy from Niels off Metallica.
Oh.
And it was really interesting because they were saying after...
Ehrlich.
Yes, if you're after 20 years, you said you'd be doing that stuff. You know, 20 years later, your songs take on a different shape when you go to play them again. And he was saying that you know, he's not sort of... Before he'd have to take into consideration like arenas, and now he doesn't have to do that. He can allow the music to come first again. Mm. And I'm thinking... And it kind of... Now, just talking about Robert Plant, it's almost quite beautiful that he still has a zest and a desire to explore things. There's still that natural curiosity in him.
Yeah, and I mean, live shows, he does play some of the greats, the Zeppelin greats, you know, slightly differently, of course, because it's not Jimmy Page stuff, and he does different arrangements of them. So he definitely does some crowd pleasers in there, there's no doubt, which, of course, being Robert Plant, you'd expect, really.
Well, and also, these songs, in their own way, they got him to where he is now, in a sense. They're part of his journey. So, and people connect so strongly with them, don't they? So in a way, that's quite beautiful. As long as, and I think that the humility of Robert Plant comes through, and any artist who revisits the early days, knowing that songs have formed such a part of the flesh and the memories of people's very fabric, haven't they?
Yeah, that's right.
In some senses.
I mean, Led Zeppelin could be really said that they are rock music. You know, they are the epitome of rock music. I'm sure we're going to get piles of emails now.
Yeah.
And it's podcast@supertonerecords.com if you want to email.
Get in there.
You know, I would honestly say that. You know, one thing that keeps coming to mind is this studio. Because a lot of the stuff that we play completely inadvertently, a lot of the stuff we listen to at home, because we play stuff on this show that we listen to all the time at home.
Yeah, that's true.
And a lot of them are recorded at Olympic Studios. A lot of them. Glyn John's worked there, you know, with The Faces. Vernon worked there, you know, with Fleetwood Mac. Led Zepp 1 was done there. You know, and there's so many great songs that were done and tracks and moments in musical history at that studio. And now it's a bar and flats. It's such a sad thing, you know?
It is indeed. But the music goes on. And this album as well, just the way that things do change, and there is that evolution that Robert was saying about this album, that it's telling the story of his life. It's kind of a journal with this album. And he said that he said, "I never joined the Merchant Navy, and I never really was a Viking."
Well, it looks like one.
"I never was any of those things, but in my own way, I'm excited by the journey, probably sometimes more than by the destination. If there's a corner to go around, then you will see quite often something that you didn't expect. That's what's been going on for me since I was about 23 years old."
Blimey. And he still lives in England. That's fantastic. He still lives in England, based up in, is it Wiltshire or Worcestershire?
Yeah, because we know we've got some friends who come and see us play live, and they're going to drop a copy of our album Blueberry Pie round to Robert's house because their mates live on the same street as Robert.
Is that right? Yeah, on the same street? Well,
she
I just popped down
to
Bob's for a cup
night.
Of sugar.
Yeah, she said, "Oh, I love your album. I'll pop one in Robert's."
Fantastic.
Anyway, I thought it was quite funny.
And you know, well, it's great.
It is. And before we play the next track, I'll leave you with this. He also said, "You know, human beings make a lot less sense than dogs half the time."
Pack my again, Mama, you know you asked me to be your kin. She said, you can, man, if you want it, I'll keep it here. But please don't let my lover, my main man, catch you here.
Leaving Trunk by Taj Mahal.
Sounds like an elephant.
It does.
Swinging trunk.
It does. Now you're getting the picture thing with the music. See, I'm a good influence. That's cool. So that the reason why I chose that song for the show today is because I've only just really come across Taj Mahal. And I'm a little bit overwhelmed because he's 75 years old. He's had a 50-year career. And I didn't know where to start with him. So I thought, well, why don't we start at the beginning? So that song was the first song from the very first album he released in 1968.
Well, if you listen to the middle of that, because I haven't heard that for a long time.
Right.
And if you listen to some vocal in the middle of that, Rob Plant has nicked some of that feel and the sound to his vocals. And I think it's on Killing Floor, actually, which is Led Zeppelin 2, which is after this was released.
No.
Yes. Oh.
I've never heard anything like that ever before, ever, ever, ever.
Well, there you go. But he played guitar and harp. And I mean, he's been around forever. And he prefers to play outside, doesn't he?
Yeah, to live audiences, because he thinks his music's about movement, and it's difficult as if people sat down just watching TV.
Yeah.
It's
and when
difficult.
You look at him, he's ultra cool. He's not just cool. He's not mega cool. He's ultra cool. Oh, yeah.
He's so cool. He's hot.
Yeah. And his name. I mean, who doesn't want to be called Taj Mahal, you know?
That's his stage name. But I don't care because I think he's great. And in fact, you know, it doesn't matter.
He's called Henry, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, might be. I was just about to say I wasn't going to say. And then you spilled the beans, man. You spilled the beans. Well, yeah, apparently, though, Taj Mahal has done much to reshape the definition and scope of blues music. He's fused non-traditional forms. And I'm looking forward to playing more of his songs on the show. But also, this guy's had 3 Grammys, been nominated 10 times. So I think there's a wealth of information, but it can be a bit overwhelming. So I think I'm going to start from the beginning and grow up with him a bit, you know, and just see where he's been on his journeys audiologically.
Well, all I know is badass.
Yeah.
Bad to the bone.
Is it worth it? A new winter coat and shoes for the wife, and a bicycle on the boy's birthday. It's just a rumor that was spread around town by the women and children. Soon we'll be shipbuilding. Well, I ask you, the boy said that they're going to take me to task, but I'll be back by Christmas. It's just a rumor that was spread around town. Somebody said that someone got filled in for saying that people get killed.
Incredible, emotional, heart-wrenching song. And so fit for the times that we're living in right now. I saw this track being performed on the Ogre Whistle Test. And Robert was there. And it was the most heartbreaking and beautiful moment I think I'd ever seen up to that point on TV, and probably since It Was Beautiful. His performance was incredible. He's in his wheelchair, his voice is so plaintive and perfect for Elvis Costello's unbelievable lyric.
I know, I can hardly speak. I just it's quite beautiful.
It is, yeah.
Just and makes you shut up, really, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Mm. Clive Langer wrote this.
He co-wrote the lyrics with Elvis Costello, and
he wrote the tune as well.
Yeah, there was some story that he wasn't quite happy with the lyrics, and he was he played the tune to Elvis Costello at a party that Nick Lowe was hosting, and
as you do.
Oh yeah. Hey, have a listen to this. And anyway, Elvis Costello came back and just turned it around, basically. And I know that I read that Robert was really conscious about singing well. He was a bit worried that he hadn't done a good enough job, but it's so honest.
Mm.
I feel like crying, actually.
Yeah, and I mean, the timing on it is actually all over the place because it's such a laid-back tune, and that double bass is what does it for me. I mean, the double bass is got such incredible emotion and feeling.
Gravitas, and the way it goes. It just makes you silent.
I do not understand what it is. I don't know if all the holes check for calls. Blink your eyes, won't forget to feel. I've known
Body Snatchers by Radiohead. Talk to me about Radiohead.
Well, this album is one of my top three albums of all time, in rainbows. Incredible.
You love Radiohead.
I do. It's a sonic assault, that song. And I love, because we are privileged, of course, to see in the waveforms, because with us doing the shows, I'm doing it on Pro Tools, and see the waveforms. And the amount of compression on this is quite awesome. It's just loud all the way through. And then all of a sudden, it gives you some relief where it breaks down into those bits where it's sort of these drums coming in and stuff. It really, you know, and there's little synths in the background. And it builds up with such great energy. And a lot of people don't realise that Thom Yorke, really, his guitar playing is what really drives Radiohead. Because you think it's, you know, you think it's the other guys, but it's not, it's him. It's, you know, it's incredible. And Phil Selway's drumming in that, it is so fierce and right on the beat. It's just slightly in front of it almost. It drives the track with such power. And Nigel Godrich, well, you know, I can't dream how he gets a sound. I mean, Nude off this album, you know, the sound, because he produced it, is just such a magical sound. And it's right in your face. The vocal, you can almost smell Thom Yorke's sweat. It's so close. Honestly, it's incredible. You listen to it in headphones, it's just an amazing record.
It feels like
record.
Survival. And when I read that Nigel Godrich had got the guys to record in a dilapidated mansion, and they'd camped out in caravans around this mansion, and he thought by putting them into an uncomfortable situation that it would be quite interesting to sort of get, and you can hear the kind of desperation survival sort of striking out, sort of, it doesn't feel cozy, does it?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel overly familiar. It feels very raw, I think.
It's a lot of tension. Yeah. A lot of tension in this record, you know? And it really comes across. You know, Godrich has captured the essence of Radiohead on this album. It's fantastic. And the producer that worked on my last album, The Knife, before we did Blueberry Pie.
I know what you're going to say.
A guy called Andy Seward. Fantastic, yeah. Producer. Folk guy, really, an acoustic guy.
He's great.
And an unbelievable bass player, upright and fretted bass. He's a great guy. But one of his best mates is Phil Selway from Radiohead. And Andy doesn't like him. He hates him. And he says, I keep getting it. He's from Yorkshire. I can't try and emulate the accent, but he says he's from, you know.
It's not his thing, basically. It's not that he hates him. He's more folk artist, isn't he, really?
He actually hates him. He keeps getting invited by Phil to go to gigs. And he was invited to the studio on this album. Oh, and he didn't go. And they got this beautiful old API console that they recorded on. I mean, I can wax lyrical about Radiohead for hours. And Johnny Ringwood is one of my favourite guitar players, because he doesn't do all the flash, all the, you know, the super bendy stuff, but he's a sonic orchestrator. I think he is like the Jimmy Page, dare I say it, of this modern era, because he's a beautiful guitar player and beautiful arranger of guitar.
You know, the one thing is, because I've got to be honest, I think sometimes Radiohead overwhelms me. Like, Nude I can get, and when it's more open and it's more sort of almost clear. And like, I mean, I am complex. I'm capable of understanding complexity. It's not that. It's just there's so much, like you say, a sonic overload, that it takes me a little while to really find a space, a way through, to know where I am with the tracks. But when I saw them play Glastonbury and the bass player is stood right at the hi-hat with the drummer and they're locked in, rhythm section official, I was so happy. I was like, because that's exactly where I'd like to be. If I could, I'd just like to spend all of my live gigs just with the drummer going, what? And then obviously breaking away to come jump around the stage with you a bit, because you're fun to play with.
No, but, you just want to be with the drummer. I know. You just want to rock out and wig out in the rhythm section. I know what you want to do. And I've got a pounce around at the front, you know?
I do, but, you are firm. But that locking in, though.
Yeah, and, you know, but on that then, it's a shame you couldn't see, because I was just wigging out. I was actually, you know, rocking my head. I was giving it plenty there, really giving it plenty. ¶¶
can see the shape you're in. Finger on your eyebrow and left hand on your hip, thinking that you're such a lady killer. Think you're so slick. Well, all right. Brother Johnny, he caught a plane and he got on it. Now he's a razor in the wind, and he's got a pistol in his pocket. They say the man is crazy on the coast. Lord, there ain't no doubt about it. Well, all right. What are we gonna do? And she said, take two candles and then you burn them out. Make a paper boat, light it and send it out. ¿Dónde vas con mi carro, Rosita? Usted sabe que te quiero, pero usted me quita todo. Ya me robaste mi televisión, mi radio. Ahora quiero llevar mi carro. No me haga así, Rosita. Ven aquí. Hey, usted qué es al lado, Rosita. Oh.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that is Spanish Stroll by the band Mink DeVille.
Very unusual band.
Very unusual.
That was in 1977. They're from their debut album, Cabaretta. Not Cabron, Cabaretta.
Yeah.
Is that Cabaretta?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
I don't know what that means. Sorry. Bad, very bad, sorry. I apologise.
But 77, of course, yeah. Punk was just happening in the UK.
Yeah.
And at the time, there was only a few bands kicking around, and they did say that it was Television, Talking Heads.
Yeah, because he was in New York. He was a house band at CBGB's.
Ah.
So he was there. He auditioned with hundreds of other musicians to play at CBGB's. And they chose him because they liked him. Because he was quirky. So he was around the time, Talking Heads, all that lot.
Right. I get it. I didn't know that.
But it was really interesting as well, because I'm a bit confused. It's very heady in terms of information about how to make some sense out of all this.
Mm.
Because really, the band, Mink DeVille, were really an R&B band, and he was like an old-fashioned soul singer. It's like, and he didn't really have anything in common with the kind of new wave punk scene that was going on with Television and all those, and Blondie,
yeah,
at the time. So people were a bit sort of bemused about why people, sort of the press had put them together as something in common, you know.
Mm.
And they were saying, you know, because his band, they were saying, preferred castanets over Tom Toms.
Get your castanets out, Mink.
I thought it was a lovely, lovely description, actually. But they were just saying that, and it's a lot to do with his edge, apparently.
Mm.
They really liked his presence. They liked his edge. And they weren't sure whether or not he was going to serenade you or pull a knife on you. quote.
And I love the bit in that song, though, where he breaks into that Spanish, or is it Mexican Spanish? I'm never quite sure, or a Catalan, I don't know.
No, we don't know, do we? Oh, yeah. That was so funny when we were first in Spain as well. We had this app on our phone, remember, and it was like we were learning Mexican Spanish for 6 months, and we had no idea that we were having the wrong pronunciations. We were right. Banana heads, weren't we?
Nobody could understand us. And we were trying our very best. And oh dear. Anyway, that was very funny. Yeah.
It was funny. So that's Mink DeVille. He's a Spanish Stroll. It went to number 20 in the UK charts, and it was the only song to chart. But I mean, he was part of the scene. And you know, if you met somebody like of his caliber with his moustache, you know, today, or of his ilk in the sense that he stood out, he was different.
Mm.
Now, I'm quite intrigued by that when I walk into a venue or a bar, you know, and you've got those characters there. And these characters are part of the history of today. And even though I love to learn these stories and we talk so much about it.
We do, yeah.
You know, I'm still thinking we need to be opening our eyes today to the people who have stood in the room with us now.
Very much so.
Because it's no good saying, oh, yeah, the golden years and stuff. Well, you know, our golden years, our beautiful times are right now.
Indeed.
So we need to make sure that we have the magic in our lives now. Open your eyes. Look for it. Live it.
Ah!
Peter Gabriel and Salisbury Hill from the album Peter Gabriel, brackets car, which I assume he was, well, of course, the picture of is in a car or by the side of a car.
That, yeah, that was his first single from after he left Genesis as well in 1977.
Produced by Bob Ezrin, the famous Canadian, and recorded again at Olympic Studios. What is it about that place? I don't know. I mean, you know, we don't purposely choose it, but, no, you know, it's incredible.
It's an interesting interesting time, really, to think with Olympic and all the music that was created there. And that song is unusual as well, because it's got this kind of weird time signature.
7/4, is it?
Yeah, something like that. And it just has this kind of feeling of struggle, of like, I don't know, you can feel like a struggling thing going on with it, can't you?
Unsettled.
Yeah. And it's like he was saying that it was written from like a spiritual experience he had on the top of Salisbury Hill, when it was it's about being prepared to lose what you have for what you might get. It's about letting go. And I'm thinking that's probably quite a beautiful transition from being in a band to going solo.
Well, yeah. And of course, I get a spiritual experience from the fact that Robert Fripp played guitar on it and Tony Levin played bass, you know, and Chapman Stick, actually, probably. Great musicians. Of course, he could command anybody. And this was the time before, you know, he went into So with...
Sledgehammer and all that,
yeah,
kind of stuff.
And all those
I remember
things,
the
yeah.
videos. I mean, that really did help him when he sort of translated that into the videos, because even my mum liked that. I remember seeing it. We were just stood there just watching it together going, this is great.
And produced, of course, those by Daniel Lanois, who's my favourite producer of all time, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, he went on, and he's done such great things, and he's such an altruistic guy. He can do no wrong for me, really. The WOMAD Festival, you know, I worked at Real World Studios. I didn't meet him when I was down there, but he's, you know, his place is cool, and he's a cool guy, you know. I always think he's a cool guy.
I think he's cool, like a bit like Gary Numan as well. I think those two are kind of, for me, quite similar in the way that I like them both.
Yeah, and they are. And the car thing comes across, you see. Cars, yeah.
Well, I think it's time now, the end of the show.
No.
Darling. Yes, it is. It's that time again. Thanks so much for joining us on the Supertone Show. You can find us, if you want to get in contact with us, on Instagram, Starlight Campbell. We're on Twitter, it's Susie and Simon. We can find us on Facebook.
And the show's available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes, and iHeartRadio. So please tell your friends.
Onwards.